Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dory Smith.
According to the only ballots that can be verified, Castle actually trounced O'Donnell.
Brad Friedman of bradblog.com joins us with an overview of the nation's voting systems as we approach the November 2nd congressional elections. He's used his bradblog.com site to document problems with the nation's voting machines for years. We talk about the latest round of problems and also questions on Bradblog about the congressional primary races and the surprise Tea Party candidate win by Christine O'Donnell in Delaware. Bradblog has been saying that no one can prove the O'Donnell win. They're pointing to surprise results in the absentee ballot count. Meanwhile, angry Republicans have filed a Federal Elections Commission complaint against O'Donnell. They're looking at campaign contributions and public outreach. Brad Friedman, welcome.
Hey, great to be here, Dory. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get started on the machines, I want to take a look at some of the campaigns, because we've had a really grim year for negative campaign ads. And you've documented here on Bradblog one of the writers, Meg Whitman's attack on former President Clinton over what had really been a CNN snafu.
Yeah, that was Ernie Canning, who's our senior legal correspondent at the Bradblog. And yeah, there was an ad that Whitman ran out here in California that was just out and out inaccurate. It was based on inaccurate information that came from CNN. It was pointed out by the Jerry Brown campaign, and yet Whitman has apparently refused to stop running it. What's different, I think, about what we're seeing in these negative ads, and certainly from Meg Whitman, is this extraordinary amount of money that's now rolling in to these ads all across the country. In the case of Whitman, a lot of it is her own. She is, in fact, a billionaire and has essentially unlimited funds. She's put, last number I think I saw was $112 million into her own election for governor of California. That is an all-time record, I do believe. I think $72 million of that was spent in the Republican primary alone. So between her private money and the corporate money that may now come in, that is now coming into elections all over the country on the wake of the Supreme Court's disastrous Citizens United decision, what chance does the truth have anymore? I mean, there is really little or no way for people to fight back. And the media, the television outlets, are loath to get into it, A, because they can really use this money that comes in for this advertising, and B, they don't want to be in a place where they're, you know, making decisions about what is accurate and what isn't when it comes to campaign ads for various candidates. So we've really got a mess on our hands that's getting worse, not better, and I think as we get closer to Election Day, you're going to see an unprecedented onslaught of ads, particularly negative ads, as millions and millions of dollars are now coming in, corporate money that nobody really knows, you know, which corporations are spending it. They are completely unaccountable, and it's rather appalling the way it's once again bastardizing democracy, I think.
At some point, we may see voters setting the threshold for tolerance for some of these negative ads. You know, at some point, they might just stop listening or stop watching. But I mean, here in Connecticut, we have another wealthy candidate, Republican Linda McMahon, outspending the Democratic opponent, Attorney General Richard Blumenthal, by massive amounts. I think it's 16-1. She's running for the U.S. Senate seat vacated by Dodd, promising to spend as much as it takes to win, and she is, you know, and saturating local TV and radio with negative attack ads. Now we're starting to see some from the Blumenthal campaign. In all, McMahon comes across more like a CEO wanting to take over a company than a politician wanting to take over a Senate seat. You know, we're not hearing much about the issues at all.
I think that's sadly appropriate. I mean, because so much of our government has now become little more than a reflection of the corporate interests out there, the people be damned. And it's really appalling. We saw it, you know, going all the way back, of course, to the health care fight, to the fight for clean energy and climate legislation. This is being driven by the corporations, period. And the Citizens United decision, which once again reaffirmed that these fictional corporations are somehow people, has only made things worse. And I think that is where we're going in this country, and we're going to continue going in this country until the people in some fashion are able to rise up and say, look, enough is enough. Problem is, even when they rise up and say enough is enough, who's going to hear them? Because they're certainly not going to get onto the corporate airwaves to make this case. But look, you've got these huge corporations who are out there fighting against doing anything about Citizens United. They love it. And so they are, instructing their people across Fox News, so that now you hear the Tea Party folks out there saying, no, we love Citizens United, and, it's free speech, and corporate money is free speech. So once again, they're yelling and screaming and protesting against their own interests, by and large, because they've been told to by those corporations. I'm not sure I'm quite as optimistic as you are, Dory, that we'll reach a saturation point. People will sort of stop listening. Whether they're watching every word, they hear it, and it affects the discussion, the debate on every single one of these issues. Just looking at the fight for climate legislation, the fact that you've got so many people out there who will tell you that, global warming is a hoax, it's been proven to be a hoax, it's completely wrong, based on absolutely nothing other than an extraordinary amount of money that's been spent by the fossil fuel industry to put out fake denialist science. And yet, this is what people have now come to believe. I think the majority of people are now against energy legislation, and this is the mess we're in, and I don't know how we get out of it.
Of course, not talking about the issues includes not talking about campaign financing, and I've not seen much about corporate funding for either Linda McMahon or Attorney General Richard Blumenthal here in the state of Connecticut.
They simply don't have to disclose it, and they're now funneling money into these, big lobbying groups like the reprehensible U.S. Chamber of Commerce, like Karl Rove's new shadow RNC group, really, American Crossroads, Americans for Prosperity organization, which was, behind, the entire Tea Party nonsense. That's all built on corporate money. And all they have to pretty much do is say, this ad has been brought to you by Americans for Prosperity or the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or American Crossroads. They don't have to tell you that it was actually bought and paid for by BP and Monsanto and Exxon and on and on and on, pick your corporation. Those guys get to hang out, secretly in the shadows and manipulate democracy, manipulate the conversation. If they were so proud of who they are and what they have to say and what they believe in, why not put their name on it? Why not say, we are Monsanto. I am the CEO of Monsanto, and I approve of this message. If these corporations are people, then maybe they need to start acting like people and show up and show us exactly who they are.
We did see Karl Rove reminding us about some of the crackpot things that Christine O'Donnell said about, mice somehow winding up with fully functioning human heads. But the Republican agenda has pretty clearly been to pull in independent voters. They're pretty sure of their base.
The point of the Tea Party and the fake anger-fed Tea Party is to get Congress back for the Republicans. And in 2 years, it'll be to get the White House back for the Republicans. Make no mistake about it. So when you see Karl Rove coming out and bashing someone like Christine O'Donnell, who you would think he would, otherwise be in favor of, this Tea Party candidate, no, he doesn't give a damn about the Tea Party. He doesn't give a damn about the things that these Tea Party folks have been tricked into getting angry about. What he cares about is control of the Senate. And I think it was Nate Silver over at 538 who had put the prospects of Republicans regaining the Senate at something like 67% on the day prior to the recent Delaware primary. After O'Donnell reportedly beat Castle, and I should say that is reportedly beat Castle, I'll have another thought on that in a moment, but after that happened, the prospects of Republicans taking over the Senate was cut in half. The numbers are that small at this point. So That's what Rove is about. He's about taking over the Senate, period, for Republicans. Same old story. This Tea Party stuff is only as real as, you know, Americans for Prosperity and the Coke industries want it to be. And in this case, they sort of went off track here, and they weren't able to rein in their own people. And in the bargain, they got Christine O'Donnell. Mike Castle would have had an easy fight against Chris Coons, and now Chris Coons, Democrat, is currently, anyway, in the pre-election polls, trouncing Christine O'Donnell.
Let's talk about the problem with the vote that is outlined on your website. They're using the touchscreen DREs in her district, right?
Actually, the entire state of Delaware, it's a small state, so we're not talking about a lot of votes. It's actually a touchscreen machine they use made by a company named Danaher Guardian. It's one of the smaller, lesser-known companies, though they're not small enough that they, too, don't have a trail of failed elections behind them going back years. But in this case, yeah, you've got touchscreen machines were used by all voters. All voters were forced to use these 100% unverifiable voting machines on election day. Now, what was interesting, and as I reported it at bradblog.com, is that Castle defeated O'Donnell, at least as far as you and I know, because according to the only ballots that can be verified, Castle actually trounced O'Donnell. The numbers are 54.7% for Castle to 45.3% for O'Donnell. That is on the verifiable paper-based absentee ballot. On election day, however, when the voters were forced to vote on these unverifiable voting systems, the numbers are almost identical but flipped in reverse. O'Donnell wins by a little bit more than 53% to Castle's 46.7%. Now, it's true that Sarah Palin came in and endorsed O'Donnell just a few days prior to the election, perhaps after a lot of those absentee ballots had already been cast. But the point is, we don't know. And this huge number, comparatively huge number of votes that were cast on election day are completely unverifiable. And we've simply got to say, well, either the machines were right or they weren't. Either O'Donnell won or she didn't. We have absolutely no way of knowing it. There is no evidence, in fact, that Christine O'Donnell actually beat Mike Castle. I don't have the evidence to show it. The state of Delaware doesn't have the evidence to show it. Christine O'Donnell can't show it. The company who makes these voting machines, Danaher Guardian, they can't show it. It is, in fact, and perhaps appropriately enough, a 100% faith-based election in Delaware. Seems to me that's no way to run a democracy.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio. I'm Dori Smith. Brad Friedman, you're now on KPFK, the Pacifica affiliate in L.A., California, and you had Bev Harris on the show very recently. Just go over what's gone wrong with the elections in Shelby County, Tennessee, that she investigated.
Oh, boy, you're going to need a longer show, Dori. This is an extraordinary story. Going back to August 5th of this year, elections out there in Shelby County, which is Memphis, and they, too, like 20% of the country still, by the way, use these 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting machines, in this case made by Diebold. But we have an absolute mess. It sort of kicked off on election day when voters were showing up by the thousands and being told that they had already voted. Now, Shelby County now uses these electronic poll books to sign people in. And I have to put the word sign in quotes because apparently there's no longer a signature. You know, poll book that you sign your name into if there's a question later on about, you know, who voted in Memphis. So you had thousands of people turned away, told that they had already voted. Election officials have since said, oh, well, we had the wrong database in there. We had the database in there from last May's election. So anybody who voted in May showed up as already having voted when they came to the polls. And I had Bev Harris from blackboxvoting.org on the air earlier to discuss this. Problem is, the May database doesn't match up with what they're showing happened on August 5th. So, you know, in other words, people who voted in May, some people were able to vote on August 5th. Other people who did not vote last May were unable to vote in August. So something ain't right there. Additionally, Bev Harris is reporting 3,221 more votes than voters. In other words, more votes are recorded and reported by the county than are shown as actually having voted that day. Those are sort of two of the main headlines. On top of that, add to poll tapes. Those are the pieces of paper that are printed out at the end of the day, signed by poll workers, you know, attesting to how many people came to vote that day. Poll tapes were found in the dumpsters, garbage bags full of them, signed by poll workers, thrown out instead of kept as they're supposed to be after an election. Bev Harris did some of her famous dumpster diving and found a bunch of those poll tapes and now has them under seal in the court, where 10 different candidates are now suing following that election, contesting it, given all of these improprieties. Bev Harris called it, during the time she was spending out there in Memphis, sort of watching a slow-motion bank robbery in progress. You know, actually seeing these materials thrown out, seeing computers thrown out, memory cards thrown out, sitting around. It is an extraordinary mess, and I suspect we're going to hear more and more about the story as we move forward. One of the points that was most troubling that Bev Harris noted was that she doesn't think that this was an isolated case of just a poorly run election or even bad apples down there in Memphis. She believes that this is actually a preview of what we're going to see on a national scale come November, now that more and more states have a fully computerized voter registration database. So a lot of trouble ahead, I'm sorry to report.
Turnout may be on the low side. I mean, a lot of people are confused right now about what to think or who to vote for. Yeah. They're angry, you know, and not sure who to direct that at anymore, it seems to me at times. But yeah. I think people are frustrated and at times, unfortunately, also feeling hopeless. But I want to talk about the possibility that electronic voting can come along and save the day, right?
Good luck with that.
Well, I mean, then you don't have to deal with, you know, tamper evidence seals that can be hacked by Pac-Man.
Yes, in fact, some white hat hackers were, in fact, recently able to hack Pac-Man onto a Sequoia touchscreen voting machine. It's absolutely remarkable. You know, you have done great work, Dory, over the years. A lot of election integrity folks have, you know, spent the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years demonstrating just how unreliable, how easily hackable, how easily gamed these voting systems are. And by the way, we're not just talking about the touchscreen machines either. We're talking about the paper-based optical scan systems, which also are not only error-prone, but can also easily be flipped in such a way that it can change the results of an election without the possibility of detection, unless you bother to count the paper ballots, which, incredibly, nobody does. So, you know, even when we have paper ballot elections, if you don't count them, what does it matter? And that's the mess that we're in. We're completely trusting in these machines, despite scientists having showed over and over again how desperately unreliable these systems are, how easy they are to hack. And yet, we continue to use them. And now, to make matters worse, their bad guys out there are doubling down. And now they're pushing us towards internet voting. And you'll remember, Dory, after the Help America Vote Act was passed, they had this little provision in there that said that there must be one disabled accessible voting device at each polling place. And, of course, Diebold and the voting machine companies out there, ES&S and so forth, they use this to say, well, you have to have one of our computers in there. They're the only devices that can serve disabled voters. And gosh, it's not fair to make them vote on one machine and everybody else gets to vote on another. So everybody has to have these electronic voting machines. And if you disagree with it, it's because you hate blind people. I mean, that was, you know, what they said over and over again, you know, that we have to do this. You know, why do you hate disabled voters? Well, now they've pulled the same scam with internet voting. Congress passed a bill that allows pilot programs for overseas and military voters to use the internet to vote, which is absolutely insane. But if you're against that, guess what? It must be because you hate the troops. Same scam, 5 years later. Unfortunately, people are out there buying it again. And so it's up to folks like you and me to at least do our best to inform the world about, you know, what the hell is going on. And after that, well, we'll see what the rest of the mainstream media or the elected officials do about it. So far, it doesn't look like they're willing to do very much, does it?
I don't see how we're going to write in a candidate if we have to do an internet vote. I don't know. Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski's running as a write-in candidate after losing her GOP primary race to a Tea Party candidate, Joe Miller, right?
Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about Murkowski's battle as you see it right now. I understand, too, that she's in an area where there will also be an issue with voting machines.
Yeah, there will. I mean, because they used optical scan paper ballots made by Diebold across the entire state of Alaska. And what we know about these OpScan systems is that they are not reliable as is, that they often misrecord votes or they don't notice votes that have been cast. And, of course, you only find this out if you're able to get a hand count at some point after an election and compare the hand count to the OpScan count. Well, this is now made even worse in the case of Lisa Murkowski because she's running as a write-in candidate, and these machines don't read the handwriting. What they read is whether an oval has been filled in or not. So now you've got an additional hurdle to overcome. Alaska has what's called a voter intent rule. In other words, if you can discern what the voter meant to say on their ballot, then the vote should count for the candidate in question. But when it comes to voter intent, that's something that it's an easily moving target. In other words, if you've got partisans who are running the election system, they can determine what is intent and what isn't. For example, back in 2000 in Florida, you had all kinds of people who actually not only punched the ballot for Al Gore, but they also wrote in his name at the bottom, Al Gore, into the write-in slot because they really, really wanted to make sure their vote counted for Al Gore. Well, that was considered a spoiled ballot, even though it was clear that they wanted Al Gore. In another race back in 2004 out here in San Diego, you had a surf shop owner who actually won the election, received a plurality of votes in a three-way contest as a write-in candidate. Unfortunately, a lot of the people who wrote in her name clearly forgot to fill in the oval next to her name, and that's what the oval is needed for the op scan to read to notice that the voter has chosen a write-in candidate. So a lot of her votes were then thrown out, or if they did happen to fill in the oval, but they spelled her name was Donna Frye, F-R-Y-E. In that case, if they spelled her name F-R-Y, the Republican registrar down there in San Diego said, well, that's not good enough. They got it wrong, and they didn't count that vote, even though the voter intent was absolutely clear. So up in Alaska, they've got a voter intent rule that if you can tell who it was meant for, then the vote should be counted. However, in this case, again, you've got Republicans running that election. In this case, you've got, it's actually the lieutenant governor up there who was appointed by the current governor, who was the lieutenant governor for Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin has endorsed Joe Miller and hates Lisa Murkowski, hates the Murkowski family, and yet, you know, it is her operation that is overseeing the elections up in Alaska. So good luck to Lisa Murkowski. Good luck to, you know, folks being able to spell her name exactly correctly. The state has already said that if voters simply write in Lisa for some reason, that won't be counted for Murkowski. I don't know why, because it seems, you know, clear that the voter intent in such a case would be to vote for Lisa Murkowski. But that's the kind of mess that we have on our hands, and we've got to count on these electronic voting machines that fail all the time in the bargain. So I'm suspecting we're going to have a mess up there in Alaska this November, but we will have to see.
Well, finally, with so much depending on what election workers, poll workers do or don't do on election day, maybe we should all be reaching out to them more.
Well, maybe we should be them more. you know, if more people showed up to be poll workers, and it is really a thankless task, but, you know, the more people who show up as poll workers, as poll observers, the more folks are educated about how the system works, the better it will work. And, you know, if you got bad guys out there working at the polls, and they're the only guys there, they can get away with anything they want. You know, you can go back to earlier this year, we finally had a conviction down in Clay County, Kentucky, where you had 8 high-ranking election officials themselves who were found guilty of election fraud for years, including, by the way, going in after the voter had left the booth to change their votes on touchscreen voting without the voter even knowing. But you also had cases where, you know, there was supposedly a Republican election judge and a Democratic election judge, but in fact, as this federal trial showed, you had Democratic poll judges who were in actuality Republicans, but they switched parties so they could call themselves Democratic poll judges, and then they went in and colluded with the Republicans to flip people's votes and to steal elections. And this was going on quite literally for decades in Clay County, Kentucky, and they were finally busted. And by the way, the people who were busted was the county clerk, the circuit court judge, the superintendent of the school district. I mean, these were high-ranking election officials. These are the people, frankly, that we need to be concerned about. It's not the voters showing up and somehow hacking the machine when they show up for their, you know, 5 minutes to go vote. It is the insiders who have the greatest access to these computer systems. It's easier for them than anybody else to flip an election without getting caught. And anybody who knows anything about computer security knows the greatest threat comes from the insiders. Nothing is different now when it comes to elections. The greatest threat are the insiders in elections. And that includes poll workers. So the more people who get out, who work at the polls, the more eyeballs citizens overseeing the entire process, the better chance that you and I and everybody else has to get an election that somehow reflects the intent of the voter. That's what democracy is supposed to be all about. It shouldn't be this hard to fight for it, but that's what we have to do. Keep fighting for it.
A lot of work to do. Brad Friedman, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Dory.
We've been speaking with Brad Friedman of the ever-popular bradblog.com. His show on Pacifica affiliate station KPFK airs every Wednesday from 3 to 4 p.m. on 90.7 FM in L.A. and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara or at kpfk.org. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dory Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut and syndicated nationally with Pacifica Network. Our website is talknationradio.org. You can write to us at talknationradio@gmail.com. Our theme music is by Fritz Heed. Underwriting for this program is brought to you by JeremyRHammond.com, political analysis from outside the standard framework. He is founder and editor of foreignpolicyjournal.com and a recipient of the Project Censored 2010 Award. New at JeremyRHammond.com, a review of Taliban proposals to turn over Osama bin Laden and Pakistani efforts to get the U.S. to negotiate with the Taliban.